So first, I want to thank the organizers for the possibility to speak. And I want to present work that we started together with Scott Shaw and Rick Heller's group in Harvard. And then I further worked on this topic in Theo Geisel's group in Göttingen. It was triggered by experience by the Westerwelle group in Harvard. And some part of the TMG experiment were actually recently published, and I'm trying to explain to you what you see on this cover. And what I will be looking at is the electron flow in a two-deck on scales much smaller than the mean free path, and raise the question, how ballistic is the ballistic transport we see in experiments? Whereas I'm the contents of my talk, I'm writing an introduction. Then I want to introduce the scanning probe microscopy experiments done in the Westerwelle group for the electron flow in the two-deck. And to analyze it, I will introduce a model for the disorder in the semiconductor heterostructure junction, perform transport calculation in it. And as we are in Santa Barbara, I have to get a connection to the Pacific Ocean, which I can. I want to explain, or give you an idea, how the results obtained above come about by the focusing of electrons by small angle scattering. And then look on an example of ballistic transport in a two-deck, a well-known example, the transverse magnetic focusing, and look a little bit more careful on the dynamic that actually happens.
So this question mark is that you don't believe that there's something like ballistic transport?
Oh yes, but the question mark means that I think you have to be careful what you call ballistic transport, and to be careful what to decide what you see in the experiment. So first, I start with something you all know. It's a point contact. Of course, the conductance through such a point contact is quantized. We have the conduction steps. Every time a new mode opens in the point contact, when I vary either the gate voltage that is making the point contact wider or raising the energy. Of course, in more detail, the conductance is given by a Landauer formula. That is the sum, basically the sum of the transmission probability of each mode through the sample. What you haven't seen 100 times before maybe is how actually electrons leave the channel. So the point contact here is in effect a short quantum channel, a short quantum lead. So when the electrons leave such a channel, these are the first three modes exiting the channel. The first mode, the second mode, and what you see, and that you should remember for the latest things, is that the nodal line of the eigenfunction in the box lead, this is a hard wall box lead, survives after the exit. So you have a nodal line here.
And so this is simulation.
This is quantum calculation on a hard wall potential. Right. And the same happens for the third mode. You got two nodal lines projecting outwards from the channel. After this initial remarks, of course, when I'm in the third mode, I have opened up the other twos as well. So if I'm in the energy in the third mode, then I have the other modes as well. And though, in fact, I would see a superposition of the three modes.
What is the shades of
gray?
Is it psi squared?
It's psi squared, yes. Okay, now let me come to describe you the experiments they've done in the Westerwelle group. Again, we have our point contact with this conductance steps. And in addition, they applied the tip of a scanning probe microscope to it. They applied a negative voltage to the tip. That is, you got a repelling scatterer in your system. And the signal they are going to measure is, they send a current in, sitting on one of these conductance steps. And now the tip will scatter some of the electrons back through the point contact. That is, you will see a reduction of the conductance of the sample.
And one thing, the tip is above the surface, right? That means that it's a big distance to suspending the...
Yeah, but it punches through the Fermi energy.
Yeah.
The voltage is just high enough. And you've got a roughly Lorentzian shape in the two-deck that is slightly higher than the Fermi energy.
So the spot at the place where the electrons move is bigger than the tip of the...
Yeah, the spot is roughly full width, it's half, maximum is roughly 3 Fermi wavelength. But actually the point of the tip that pushes through the Fermi wavelength is much smaller. And we've done numerical calculations to show that it only depends on the size of this small part of the tip that's actually above the Fermi energy that really gives you a signal. So as soon as you are 10% below the Fermi energy, you almost get no signal back. So, okay. Now here again is the point contact with the conducting steps. Now they introduce the tip in the center of this channel. We have seen before that the first mode has a high density here, the second mode has zero density here. And we actually see that in the experiment, that the first conducting plateau is reduced by 10%. The second step remains at 2E square of H. So we only, part of the first mode is reflected, second mode is not reflected. Now,
and that depends on the position of the tip.
That depends on the position of the tip. And in the center, the second mode has no contribution because it has no line there. Therefore, this.
No, but did they actually move the? I understand the table, but did they actually move the tip to see it?
Look, there's the tip on another position.
Okay.
Here, the first mode has no contribution. The plateau, the step size is 2e square of h, and the second mode is suppressed by 15%.
What is the temperature?
Temperature is, I think it's 1.7 Kelvin. In this experiment.
If I can translate the temperature as the distance between the tip and the point contact, in terms of the level spacing.
Okay.
So what is the relation? I just wonder why there is no any fluctuations of the conductance due to phase scattering from this point.
Okay, you will see that in detail later. You can now see how you can actually spatially visualize the flow from the point contact by moving the tip around, and at every place you put the tip, record the conductance difference and plot it as a map, a colored map. That's done in the next slide. That's just, again, the point contact. This column is a simulation done by Scott Shaw of the wave function in smooth point contact, so not hard wall, but some parabolic wall. And here are the experimental results. So you see the first mode coming out, you see the second mode coming out. Actually, of course, as told you, at the energy where you have the second mode open, you should have the first mode open as well. But they just subtracted the first picture from the second to show this, the second mode, right? And likewise with the third mode. But this only shows you a tiny section of the two-deck in front of the in front of the point contact. Actually, this region is shaded out because when they approach the gates of the point contact too much with the tip, and they get no signal anymore.
Yeah, there's also a bar there indicating the intensity, so to speak.
Yes.
Is that a linear scale, or so the yellow and the blue, for example, is that 0.3 per?
Here it's 5? 0, and this is 0.8.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is roughly 40% of the mode reflected. The change in conductance versus tip position. So I have the tip position is plotted here, and the color shades tell you how much the conductance changed.
I was trying to observe why the yellow portion sort of stops. Is that where the point was, where the reflector is located?
No. The reflector was located everywhere, right?
Yes. No,
you have a 1/r diminishing of the signal. You will see it in a moment, but as you move out, the signal has to decrease because you have more phase space, right? And this is only the central part of the two-day next to the point contact. It looks very well, the agreement of theory and the experiment. But if you look now on a larger scale, they were quite shocked. this is only the first mode coming out of the point contact. So it's not the smooth fan you would expect. And one might have expected that small angle scattering by disorder in this system would even increase the fan out of the electron flow, but not produce such strongly pronounced branches in the current flow.
So the bright color means the low conductance, right?
Yeah.
Strong change. We see that conductance is high everywhere except a few points.
No, but it shows the change in conductance. That means if you put your tip here, there's a lot of the density that is actually found here. The current density is reflected back. Of course, but the color is, of course, the part of total conductance. And of course, if you're near the point contact, you have a lot of phase space, so to say, to reflect. And there's a 1/r or 1/r distance diminishing of the effect, of course. And that's why you need a point contact to see it. Because if you just would put the tip on top of a 2-deck and measure conductance change, you would see nothing.
Right. But isn't this the implication of changing the conductance and sort of blocking the electron lines a little bit dangerous? But because imagine that you actually block the electron went through and you are able to block it. But if it had passed through the side, that won't necessarily mean a change in the conductance.
Right, of course. Totally. Therefore, they're not very happy with what they saw, because they thought maybe it's just the way we measure it that it looks like this, right? And that's the aim of my talk, to show you that actually the wave function and everything looks like this, and maybe to explain you how it comes about. Okay? And because it's a nice picture, I show you. And of course you see quantum oscillation you asked for all over the place, even beyond the point where you would expect to see something because of thermal smearing. The thermal smearing should illuminate them after roughly a micron, and it doesn't. But I won't come to that point in my talk today. I will stick to this branching, to this more profound effect scene.
So what then, the distance between these interference patterns? Is that
half the wavelength, half the thermal wavelength. Yeah.
This is a
really
nice picture, but still, this length over which you see bunching traces about 1 micron, and
more, much more. But
what about the internal process? This gate from the construction.
Yeah.
How far are they from the electron gas?
Okay, I think it's roughly 40 nanometers.
40.
40 nanometers. But you know roughly how wide your point contact is because you're in the first mode, right?
Right, but another kind of potential effects on electrons may be quite smooth.
So, yeah, of course. I actually don't care about the potential of the point contact. The point contact, as I explained before, is just the point source of illumination to enable us to see actually the pattern of the current in the disorder potential of the two-deck.
Right, the funny thing is that you still have this clearly pronounced modes or whatever, lights, right? This is the thing that is strange.
No, I will show you. Just a second. No, it's not strange. So, one could have expected. One thing, of course, this picture now shows both sides of a point contact, and of course you see differences because the disorder potential on both sides is different. But if you get bored later on in the talk, you can think about why it is possible to measure this actually with DC, with AC current. And if in the end you ask me why, I might be able to explain. Now, I want to come to the model for the system. We have some point contact here. I won't dwell at that at all. This is the tip that punches through the Fermi energy that is indicated by the red plane. And now I want to focus on how does this wiggly background well below the Fermi energy, as it turns out, how this is structured. And for that aim, I have to get a little bit into the detail of how the system was actually prepared. We had a delta-doped gallium arsenide, aluminium gallium arsenide heterostructure. The doping layer was spaced 22 nanometers above the potential well of the two-dimensional electron gas and fed the electrons in there. So how does this donor layer that is actually just one or a few molecular layers thick, so it's really a delta doping layer, it consists of silicon atoms, how are they distributed? Of course, first they are Poissonian distributed, and before I go into the distribution model, for the simplest model, we just model the screen potential each donor produces by this point charge of a conducting plane. We use the quantum mechanical screen potential as well, but we can't write that down in an analytical form, and it makes no big difference. I will stick to this.
This calculation with the actual potential are very tricky, because for example, if you assume potential they are Poisson, means that one can go on top of each other.
Yeah, that's the next point.
It's a mistake.
So of course, if you actually take seriously that the donors are Poissonian distributed, you get a huge potential. You overestimate the potential by orders of magnitude, and that is because the atoms itself, they are fairly well Poissonian distributed, but only part of them are ionized, and two that are very near to each other are not very likely to both ionize. Okay, and there was a paper by some people from Austria 2 years ago. They actually calculated the density correlation functions in the donor layer of such a system. And the only thing that I want to point out to you, we are somewhere in the Philly effector region up here, that this correlation is basically a step function. So if they get too near to each other, they won't ionize both. And this can be translated into a maximum density of charge in the donor layer. So what we did, and because we have 70,000 donors in a square micrometer, and we will have to cover several micrometers, square micrometers, it's hard to actually simulate every individual donor, but actually to create donor charge density on the lattice and take this charge density on the lattice that is has a cutoff, an upper cutoff due to this correlation function I showed you. We then convolute it with a single donor potential and arrive at an impurity potential. In addition to the donor contribution, this impurity potential has contributions from negatively charged carbon ions that are three-dimensionally spaced, distributed in the crystal, but are fairly rare. And we found out that their contribution is not so much to the branching of the electron flow, but more to the quantum oscillation that we see. So I will mainly talk about the donor potential now. Now, just to check if we are in the right orders of magnitude with our model, we calculated the mean free path, classically mean free path, and the experimentalist estimated the mean free path of their systems between 6 and 7 micrometers. So we are all right in the right order of magnitude. And this now calculations, model simulations of the flow through this system. Here there's a, you see here the point contact. This is a quantum wave function calculated by finite differences methods and leads attached to all four sites. And so here's no tip in it, yeah, right? This is just a wave function of the system. And you see the strong branching in the wave function as well. And if you calculate the classical flow, the classical current through this disorder potential, you actually get the same, almost the same structure. You can see this branching of the flow. So actually the branching of the flow is a classical property. It's a classical effect. And on the upper, on this upper picture, you actually see the shadow of this classical current distribution cast over the disorder potential. So green are the valleys, gray are the hills. And what you see is that actually there are no rivers forming or something in the potential where the electron flow that the electron flow follows, but the flow actually goes straight over valleys and hills. So it's on some mystic fashion that small angle scattering actually produces this pronounced current flow, rivers of current flow.
How do you simulate the opening? Is it just a parabola? It seems like a parabola that the door opens up, or?
This is a parabola, yeah.
And you stop at some point and then it gets to a regular wire? How do you check the
Oh, yeah, it's modulated in the x direction as well. So they have.
As you go along in x.
In x.
So at some point you don't have, you no longer have a parabola, you just put car walls.
No, I think here actually there's how it works out here, right?
No, I mean in the sort of horizontal line.
Here, oh, down there.
Over there, horizontal, yeah. But you could. But
Your
boundary yeah.
No, here's another channel. There's a wide quantum channel attached to it. So we have an open system.
The question is, in the y direction, is there any kind of potential?
No.
No confining
potential. There's a lead attached in this direction, there's a lead attached in this direction, there's a lead attached in this direction, there's a lead attached in this direction.
Is in the experiment, right. Like in the simulation?
No, in the simulation, yeah.
Okay.
here read that yellow means that the amplitude of wave function is large, currently.
Right.
So we see that in a few points, along few lines, the current is large, but everywhere else it is small. It is the opposite to what we saw in the extreme. Right?
No. No.
There, dark means large and dark.
This is the density of the electron flow, right?
What we measure is local density of space, don't we?
No, just put an obstacle with it, so...
Is
there no current?
It's not... okay.
Can you explain to me why classical current does not behave like water?
Like what?
Like water. I mean, this water. It's a really hilly landscape, and so I was thinking, well, it's sort of a water flow.
Yeah, but
classical current. But why is that not the case?
Because my Fermi energy is well above this this disorder potential. The disorder potential in the model we used turned out to be roughly 5% of the Fermi energy.
For this
specific
potential.
Yeah, I've showed it.
Okay, so the nuclear plus LP is 6.5 microns,
right.
And this flow
is elastic or transport?
It's elastic.
It's elastic.
So, and what is the length of this?
He is 500 nanometers, so this is 1.5 or 2 micrometers.
Well below the nuclear plus.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I just take nuclear plus to infinity, then I would see. Does the wave function in a free space, how does it look like?
Yeah, you should. Mm-hmm.
And it also will be still strongly peaked in the middle and then floating?
It
will be your first transparency.
Yeah, right.
So it was the length scales agree.
Yeah.
I mean, it did it.
Right.
And in the quantum calculation, do you have only three transverse channels in the quantum contact?
This is the first mode.
Only one mode.
As in the experiment. The experiment was first mode as well. That's only one mode coming out of the point contact.
So you're saying that the collimation, I mean, if there's no background potential, collimation is so strong that you see a strongly peaked wave function even 10 times away. Well, 10 times longer than, I don't know how to say it, the distance 10 times longer than the distance of the junction, still have strongly peaked wave function.
Yeah. Actually, I show you a correlation function later on, it's about the order of magnitude larger than you would expect by just the fan-out. The density is an order of magnitude larger than what you would expect by just the fan-out.
Can I ask you a very simple question right on that graph right there? So when you check the mystery path there, you're just throwing a ball and watching it roll. And so there's no there's no scattering. There's no, you know.
No additional scattering. No,
yeah, so everything is just the rolling ball slowly changing its direction.
Right. Yeah, but at low temperatures, it's fine.
Well, yeah, we still, you know, quantum presence, so we think that we have to do some calculation.
We just communicated that mentally we always have extremely naive picture
about
scattering or impurity.
But this thing here is going into the classical Cuber formula, right? This is the kernel of the classical Cuber formula, and then you get transport. As it's already very late, I hope you will. I could show you now a picture of part of it scanned with the tip actually calculations, but you have to believe me that it just looks the same, or roughly the same, when I actually move a tip above it. So we, in the experiment, you mainly see the fingerprints of the classical flow or of the quantum wave functions. Okay. Now, let me come to the Pacific Ocean.
Can you, summarize a bit what are the main surprises, or what's the main thing here? So essentially you are saying that you are able to map the electron lines
I mean, surprise is why is it branched, right?
That's,
and which is what he's getting ready to try to explain. That's the classical surprise.
Right, that's...
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That it doesn't just fan out by small angle scattering, but you see some math like that, right?
And you are saying that in the transfer direction, you really took something infinite.
Yeah.
Because
the calibration is so strong, mm-hmm. and the scattering is so low angle, it goes right.
No, but there's stuff going out there. But I can show you details of the calculations later on in product. But it's actually written down in Data's book about metascopic system, how you do that.
But I mean, this has nothing to do with all that. This is just stand on a rough surface with BBs and throw them forward.
Right.
And you'll find that most of them go in a particular direction.
Right. The classical thing is easy to do. Right.
Balls rolling on surfaces.
Right. I mean, there's no friction escape. The junction apparently doesn't. If you get, say, really good contact with sharp boundaries, you'll expect diffraction, right? So,
yeah,
without any disorder, you'll still kind of almost start to live. And it's happening here.
Right.
That's already nice to see.
Okay. You might have heard of this experiment they do where they put a loud speaker in Hawaii and they send sound through the Pacific Ocean and they pick it up with a microphone in LA. Steve Tomcevich and Wolfson were good, well known in the quantum chaos community. They actually did a simulation of this sound propagation in the ocean. And it actually boils down to a two-dimensional system because the sound doesn't propagate to deeper areas of the ocean, and the surface, of course, another boundary. So it actually stays in thin layer on top of the ocean. And they can map it to a Hamiltonian system. So you get something very similar to what we have. It's a Hamiltonian system with smooth, weak disorder that soil density changes and temperature differences in the ocean. And here are some simulations they did for the sound propagation in the Pacific Ocean, and you see similar branched flows as we see in the 2D, but only on scales of several thousand kilometers instead of some microns. And here they try to explain this phenomenon by looking at the stability matrix along the flow. And you can think of it, divide your random potential up in small chunks, and each of them produces a random stability matrix. And now the total stability matrix from going from here to here is just a multiplication of all the small chunks stability matrices. And if you take the logarithm of it, you would expect to add up random variables, so you will expect a normal distribution. And that is what you find, that they found it here, we checked it in our system as well. You find a log normal distribution of the trace of the stability matrix. But I'm not convinced that it actually tells you why the branching takes place. I think only it describes this as well, as the pictures do. So I want to try to give you a bit more of an intuitive picture of how the branchings come by. And what I take here is a small portion of my, and this is just for illustration, a small portion of my random potential. And at this point somewhere I start a cosine distribution of electrons going out, angular distribution, cosine distribution. And what happens, the one in the middle goes straight through because I aim it on this potential well. And the one that goes to the side will be reflected a little by the potential hills. And if you look at the distribution you get a nice focusing in the middle. That's clear for this simple model. Now, I do this same thing, but tilt this potential a little. You see, I put it out of the center of the distribution, and I tilt it in itself. So still, you see a focusing of the trajectories. And now what I do, I start cosine distributions in my disorder potential. And I just, for now, I'm just looking at this, at a small part of the center. And what I do now, I follow the central line, regardless if this is in a peak of the current density or in a valley. Just the central trajectory that comes out is this angle zero. And of course, I start in all different positions and with all angles in my disorder potential. And look how where the central trajectory hits the circle and turn this position on the x-axis. And then I average over all initial conditions. And you still see that a focusing in average occurs in the system. This construction of a correlation function is very simple. And to see
now,
if...
What is the input in this calculation? What do you solve exactly?
Classical equation of motion.
Classical equation of motion in this potential.
Right. Without the point contact and the tip, just the imputed potential, right? And if you want to see how it actually evolved with the strength of the disorder potential, you can't do it the simple fashion I just showed you. But you actually have to go over and take the central trajectory and follow it and make this your x coordinate and takes a perpendicular direction to the y coordinate. Here are some examples of disorder potential. This is 1% of the Fermi energy. This is 5%. This is 15%. And you can actually do the same thing I did before. Now in this local coordinate. And what you see, this is a clean sample. You just have the cosine distribution. And already by 1%, you see a small focusing occur at the zero angle, and it gets stronger and stronger when you increase the disorder potential. You can see better if you actually multiply by the factor S. That's just because I expect a fan out of 1 over R, or 1 over S in this example. So you see the focusing very nicely in all this different strengths, disorder potentials. This now are actually Gaussian disorder potentials. And I just show you the center section of it as a curve. And you see that actually the bottom line is what you expect for a clean sample. And you see actually that along the path, in average, along the path, you get an order of magnitude higher density for certain distance, at least. And now, for the last couple of minutes, let me come to the question, how ballistic is ballistic transport? And I want to look at the example of transverse magnetic focusing. Let me just first give you an idea of the scheme of this experiment. You have an emitter emitting electrons in a sample. You have a drain where you draw them out. And in addition, you have a collector, a CERT gate, where they can leave the sample. And now you apply a magnetic field in the transverse direction. And in the simple picture of it, if the cyclotron diameter just matches with this permittivity L, you would expect that a lot of electrons can go out through the collector. And what you will see is a maximum in the resistance from here to here. And you will see another maximum resistance if you have a bounce in between. So the diameter, the cyclone diameter is half the emitter collector distance, and so on, three times, four times. You can, and this was seen long ago by in experiments and explained by Benecke and van Houten in a hardwall potential by the formation of core sticks, because it's not so simple as I made it here. It's far not so simple, and I will give you a little insight into this, how it is in a soft wall potential, and then I will go to the disordered system. What I will do, I have two-point context model somehow, but smooth potential, smooth walls. I inject current through this point contact, and part of it will go out through this point contact. The rest is my signal. And what I will show you later on is just these densities that I indicated here on top of the potential, plotted in this fashion. So now you have my two-point contacts again. I show you the potential, the density, and now first I want to dim it and show you the time evolution of the system. I show you the dynamics on top of this stationary density that arises. And I send in some, wrong button, sorry. Okay, now I send in a small packet of initial conditions and see it evolve in time. So what you see is, first the short trajectories hit the wall. Then, because you end up with an angle distribution here. And in the end, the longest trajectories hit the wall. And this, the point where they hit the wall actually moves from here to there and back. And when this turning point is just above the second point contact, that's a core stick that's forming. So you really see it very nicely forming in this simulation. Now, I want to do the same thing for disorder potential. Here, we have again, the two point contacts, and now added the disorder potential as I've described before. And I do the same thing as before. Dim the density, and now compare it to the clean sim system. Again, the wrong button. Now, okay. Again, you see the clean system, but and here in the disorder system, okay, you see an arc forming there, but you see nothing of a core stick still forming, right? It just falls there somehow. And you can even see more, maybe, while looking at them.
You are saying that they were lucky in the experiment that they have some disorder, so they focusing?
No. Why?
I mean, it doesn't work better with that like, bit of disorder because of this channeling.
No, it works much worse, but it still works. That's the interesting thing. Oh no, this computer doesn't. Ah, no. And I show you only the stationary distribution that arises as and varying the magnetic field. So the magnetic field is the time. So in the upper half, you see again the clean system. You see this core sticks here moving in as the magnetic field arises. And so we would be at the second peak here. And now, again, you don't see caustics or anything building up in this system. But what you see is, I think that's quite interesting. If you look at this branch of the flow, for example, it stays stable for a long range of magnetic fields, actually. Right? There. So, after I saw the simulation, I didn't know what to expect, if I should expect still focusing peaks in the system. And I would expect them. The distance between the two point contacts is 1.5 microns. The mean free pass in this was 6.5 to roughly 7 microns. So I should see, by the user judgment, still focusing peaks in this sample. And indeed, if I calculate the resistivity, I see focusing peaks. Of course, they are not so pronounced as the clean system, but you wouldn't expect it in a real experiment. And now, Schmuel wanted to see if one could see artificial peaks as well, artificial focusing peaks that are not real. So I just something slightly different. I might may give you some more information even. What I do here is I look at the density, cut it along the x-axis by taking away my boundary, the point contact and the wall. So I just see when they come out of the point contact, where do they hit the x-axis again. The red curve is a clean system. You see this sharp peak, asymmetric peak that is acoustic. And when I change the magnetic field, low magnetic field, higher, this peak comes in near to the first point contact. That is sitting at zero. So, and in the experiment, in the magnetic focus experiment, I would have a second point contact here, and I would just see this distribution run over my point contact. And that's the peak I see in the experiment. Right? So the black line now is the distribution that arises in the disorder potential. And I show you the same thing now color-coded on the next slide with varying magnetic field. So the lower part is here is the clean sample. So this bright spot here is the it's a caustic homing in. What you see before on this first slide were cuts in this direction through this plot. So my second point contact is somewhere here, and as I vary in magnetic field, I get a peak right here in this plot. Now, compared to the disorder case, still I have my, in the experiment, I have point contact here. I see that there's a envelope of some amount following the clean system, the ballistic system. But actually, if I would measure in this direction, I would find my focusing peaks quite somewhere else. And there, so most of the this magnetic field, even though I would measure a focusing peak in the experiment, say here, when the second point contact is here, the most of my density is actually over here. So this shows that actually in the to see this distribution or to see the density forming in the system, you made the you took the you searched for the maximum in the wrong direction, right? So that only that shows you that what you see in a ballistic experiment, ballistic transport experiment, might be misleading, actually. So with that, I want to come to my conclusion. I hope I showed you that the electron flow and two-deck on scales below the mean free pass is strongly branched, that this branching originates from focusing by small angle scattering, and that ballistic transport may be strongly influenced by it. But before I finish, I have to introduce someone to you, because a lot of you were not here yesterday for the party. There was a new person. It's a mean nanoscientist. That's actually the average of all the pictures from the websites from participants of the nanoscience program. Thank you for your attention.
Given the quality of the presentation, we may forgive Ragnar for not having the talk on the blackboard. So I think it would have been, I realized that it would have been a bit deep.
Yeah.
So, okay, then other questions? Yeah.
No, when you presented classical calculation,
yes.
What happened if for some potential you've got mechanics?
For simple what?
You presented the classical computation for the same potential in quantum mechanical. The last figures.
For the yeah. Michael Fox, I didn't do that. It's quite hard.
Yeah, but as an idea, would it should be the same? You know, the argument why it should be the same?
Yeah, as long, I've shown you before that this branching is mainly a classical effect, right?
Yeah, between quantum mechanics and its corrections, and then they can accumulate, for example, maybe backscattering, and that will lead to some interpolarization effects, for example. Why don't we want the interpolarization effects?
In the magnetic focusing.
Well,
what would you expect from weak localization to have an influence on magnetic focusing?
You have any idea how far you have to, how many nasty meters apart you have to go to really come to the diffusive region?
Oh, yeah. It depends on how you look at it. All these pictures are done by illuminating by a point source. Now if you take...
But we're still only 1 meter away from that source here.
Right. But as you see, actually, in this transparency about the mean free path, you got a very nice, you get a very nice exponential distribution here. That means as soon as you start filling up all your phase space, you don't see this anymore, and you get the diffusion in the first place. Right? It just, if you look on parts of phase space, that you can actually see this vector rising.
This is all 2D, but your focusing experiments in 3D and in 2D. So if you compare.
I haven't thought about the 3D.
I assume from what you say is that all the 3D focusing experiments must have had a much clearer signal than all the 2D experiments.
Yeah. I haven't checked that. Have you an idea of how well the...
Well, I recall that in the 2D there are funny things popping up. I mean, that's in agreement with what you see. I do not recall precisely how clear the signals in 3D look like.
I
recall that whole caustic analysis really works perfectly well. But it would be worth to make a good comparison.
Yeah, but that might be because you don't have the disorder potential of the of the donors, right?
Yes,
that would agree very well with, for example.
Yeah. Anton, you had a question? Anton?
Yeah? I had a question about 3D as well.
Ah, I see.
Okay. So, one thing is in the experiments of the ocean. I mean, this analogy of the 2D dimensional electron gas is a little bit far-fetched in the sense that I imagine that there are long-scale fluctuations as well. Like, if you were in the Atlantic instead of the Pacific, I know that there's the Atlantic.
Yeah, okay.
So there has to be some mountains.
Yes, of course. Definitely. But even if there are mountains below the water, 300 meters, and as I said, the sound propagation is only at the surface, that wouldn't matter too much. So what? And of course, this is part of the disorder potential. You see, the length scale I've shown you is several thousand kilometers. So your length scale of your disorder is on the order of several hundred kilometers, or 100 kilometers. So what you say, it's part of the disorder potential they see.
Yeah, okay. but also in the two dimensional electron graphs, it's known that, okay, the point, I remember when he was a student, he was talking about this sample because he was, well, the impurity were sinking in close to point A or point B.
Yeah, of course.
Completely the, different things. So it's,
of course. Yeah, but you that would happen in this here as well, yeah? If I try to measure something there, I would be out of luck, right?
So do the waves feel each other only if they are positioned correctly a few thousand kilometers apart, or how does it work?
Yeah, that's actually the point. Why they had to...
If they move too far, then they lose track of the sound of the other.
Right.
Okay. Any more further questions?